spoilers for all published books of George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire and all televised episodes of HBO's Game of Thrones.
Atcha patch. Night gathers, and now our podcast begins. It shall not end until we're done talking. We are
the princes that were promised.
Welcome to the princes that were promised. It's me, it's Shawnee Wan, and finally, once again, live in the studio, it's John. Jesus, John, what's it been?
It's been a couple months.
Well, it was before July. It's been since, like, June.
Yeah.
Any news we want to discuss before we get started?
Just the director, that's pretty much been it.
I'm psyched about the directors.
Yeah, it's just been, it's just two plus D&D, which, by the way, you know what? I know a lot of people are against it. They have directed other episodes in this. It's not like this is their first time directing an episode. You know what?
And they have every right to do it.
It should be theirs. I mean, at this point, it should be their last. Perfect ending would be getting George to write the last episode.
That's what I was going to ask you. Think that he has the time, and he should.
Well, he'll always make the time. We all know he'll make the time for anything but the book.
I'm not sure how many he's involved in. And last I read, there's five prequel projects in development. And the one I'm most excited about is being developed by Brian Cogman with George Martin's help. But as I read it, George is involved in pretty much every single project.
This is why I hated at the outset when they first mentioned this. I said, now they're going to be calling George, you know, for more ideas, for better understanding. And it's going to be, I got plenty of time. I'm not doing anything.
At least I'll make time for you guys.
I am most excited about the Cogman series because I think that Brian Cogman episodes in Game of Thrones, I think those have been fairly strong for the most part. And I would think that HBO would be most likely to keep that project going, especially with George Martin's involvement and being that Cogman has had success with Game of Thrones.
Now, which one do you think they're going to do?
I think Aegon's Conquest is the most likely. You have so many characters in that, right? There's already a rich history. I mean, Robert's Rebellion, you have a rich history, but that's going to be addressed in Game of Thrones. Whereas Aegon's Conquest, Aegon and his sisters, the Targaryen family, but then you also
and
have...
And that gives you the two female leads, too, with Aegon and his sisters. So you once again have the branching out to male and female. Well, you're going to have two... It's not just going to be Aegon, it's going to be like a tale of men.
Yeah.
You know, like, if it was like... If they're going to do like Duck and Egg, let's say, for example, the two main characters are two male. You don't really have a strong female lead.
You don't. Not
with
at all.
Aegon's Conquest, you have two female leads.
Who are very strong. Well, one of them, well, they're both very strong. One of them was the strong warrior type. One was a strong political player type.
Let me also add, if they do Aegon's Conquest, it will go hand in hand with the name Aegon, since we just know that John's name is, it's going to be fresh up people's mind.
Yeah.
Aegon and Aegon, which I have a couple questions for you.
Well, they'll say the dragon factor also.
Yeah.
The grown dragons.
Right.
People are way into, obviously, the dragons in season 7. But it's not just the Targaryens then. Torrhen Stark and Blackharren and, you know, all these other characters that you know from Aegon's Conquest. It's such a cool story that I would love to see a TV show about it. I would think it'd be, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't want to say less disappointing, but it'll be less of... Will this episode be like the books or will I be disappointed in it? Because it's really just an outline that George has written. You know, he doesn't have a exact story through it.
Let's not give any ideas.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Cogman will call him up like, you know, like I was talking with Brian Cogman. He had a great idea that I should write a whole entire book series.
This guy. Yeah, I think Aegon's Conquest would be most interesting. I mean, there's other events throughout history, but the Doom of Valyria, how do you make a TV show about that?
Yeah.
Or Nymeria's crossing to Dorne. Okay, but nobody liked Dorne in Game of Thrones, so then I can make a TV show about that.
I can only think of they can do is to a Duck and Egg, possibly.
Blackfyre Rebellion, War of the Nine Penny Kings.
The Blackfyre Rebellion would be a close B, a second option with Blackfyre Rebellion. But the only thing is, you know, how I just said how kind of like with Aegon's Conquest, you go into connection with Aegon, you said with the dragons, with the name Aegon. The show really hasn't mentioned the Blackfyres.
No,
it hasn't. So you might need Aegon's Conquest to set up the Blackfyre Rebellion.
Yeah.
So I think Aegon's Conquest is probably...
The show hasn't mentioned Blackfyres at all, really, right? They might have mentioned Meleys the Monstrous or something to that effect when talking about like Sir Barristan Selmy's victories.
I don't know. They've totally have not discussed really much about the Blackfires because they changed so much. The big thing is they haven't added in Fagin, and that's the whole entire cusp of the current storyline. And I wanted to bring up quickly, just real quick, and I know a lot of people out there are still questioning John's real name being Aegon.
Oh, they really?
Oh, yeah. But it's perfect sense that it is because in for the books, you're going to have a setup of Aegon versus Aegon. Real versus fake.
Right.
Who do you believe is the real,
real dragon versus the cloth dragon.
Right.
Yeah.
It's perfect sense. We've seen Dance of the Dragons, Dragon versus Dragon, now we're seeing Aegon versus, we can possibly see Aegon versus Aegon.
Well, that implies that there's something about that name that Rhaegar believed in, unless we go with your theory that Lyanna named him.
Unless, just how Ilya believed in the prophecy, maybe then Lyanna believed in the prophecy. No, okay.
Well, did Ilya believe in the prophecy or did?
Well, she said that, he has a song, he's the prince that was promised. She mentions that Aegon was the prince that was promised. He has a song, he's the song of ice and fire.
Okay.
Now you realize, Lyanna's like, we're fire and ice, so yeah. I'll just name him Aegon. Aegon died anyways.
Aegon did die by then. She would have gotten news about that.
Oh, yeah, the Kingsguard knew about it.
It's their job to know.
Ned's questioning and all.
Yeah. Like, it may be with the women, it may be with Lyanna, with Ilya, maybe it's a different dynamic between men and women in Westeros. So if Rhaegar is a believer in this prophecy and these women are married to him, they're just going to believe in the prophecy because he does, because that's what he says. They're not going to disagree with him. They're much more subservient, I would think. But it's possible that he made a believer out of them. I would think more likely he made a believer out of Lyanna just because she's younger and more impressionable. And she just seems like she has more of an imagination than Ilya. But we don't really know too much about Ilya. We know that Oberyn loved her and we know that she was obviously beautiful. Yeah. But she was I know she was small framed and childbirth was hard on her. She wasn't able to have a third child. But that's it. We don't know anything about what her beliefs were, what kind of attitude she had, what she was interested in. Whereas with Lyanna, at least we know she was like a tomboy. She was adventurous and a big imagination, and she loved to ride horses. We know stuff about her.
Right. She's told stories by old man, so she's probably into storytelling, which could lead to the whole, prophecy.
You don't get the vibe that Lyanna would be the type of, it'd be like Arya. Like if Ned made a marriage pact and put Arya in it, it's not something that Arya would be into. And you kind of get the same vibe about Lyanna, right? She would have married Robert Baratheon, but she definitely didn't want to.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't. She decided instead to run over Rhaegar. I don't think Ilya would have done any of those things. She would have done what she was told.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that being the difference between the two.
I just have a quick question for you because Aegon, John Aegon, you might know more than I don't know what the correct answer to this. Would he be the sixth of his name or the seventh of his name? Two technicalities here. Mm-hmm. Technically speaking, once Jaime stabs and kills Aerys, at that point in time, the Targaryen king is Aegon. Because no one knows about any kind of annulment or anything. Yeah. Leaving all that out, out of the question. But he was never officially named Aegon the Sixth. It's just a matter of circumstance. Okay, Rhaegar, Aerys dies and the next heir at that time, the next Targaryen is, for however brief the time that was, between the time that Aerys was killed and the mountain killed the baby, technically speaking, he's king. Now, do you have to be officially named?
Yeah, I think you need to be anointed as king have the second or the third.
So if John ever gets to the point where he'll actually then will be Aegon the Sixth.
Yeah.
Would not be Aegon the Seventh.
There's Aegon from the Dance of the Dragons, who was never a king. He's just another Aegon Targaryen. But he had become king, then he would have been Aegon the Sixth, I think, right? Because he was after Aegon the Unlikely, who's Aegon Fifth, right? Aegon the Unworthy is Aegon the Fourth. Aegon the Unlikely is Aegon the...
That's Duncan Egg.
That's Duncan Egg Aegon, right. Yep. And then Rhaegar's Aegon would have been Aegon the Sixth. He still could be, but that's the second possible Aegon the Sixth. Yeah, you have to...
So you have to be officially named, have to be sworn in, to be official.
I guess you could say, you can make an argument that when Rhaegar's killed by Robert and Aerys is killed by Jaime, was Aegon still alive? The baby Aegon still alive at that point? So Aerys got killed first and then the mountain killed.
Yeah.
I guess you can make a case that technically...
He was never officially named.
But he was anointed.
They never named this little...
Yeah.
Here he is. Yeah. Get that baby.
Right. Before you kill him, you just got to anoint him.
So then Jon would be Aegon the Sixth.
Yeah, he's going to be Aegon the Sixth.
Joffrey Baratheon is Joffrey, first of his name. But before that, it's just
Joffrey Baratheon, mm-hmm. Crown Prince, heir to the Iron Throne.
That was my question.
Yeah.
And then going just Aegon versus Aegon.
Yeah, Aegon versus Aegon is interesting.
On paper, who's going to look more believable? At first, it's going to be Fagin. Because he's got the blonde hair. And like, and people find out that
John's going to have John Connington. He's going to have Dorne behind him. And maybe that's why Dorne didn't work out so good in the TV show. Because the point of Dorne is to support
Aegon.
Yeah.
And they had, I was actually going to bring that point up on one of these podcasts.
Yeah.
The fact that Dorne doesn't work out well is because they have totally not put in the Fagin storyline.
And then that answers the question of
why Arianne Martell's not in the show, because I think Arianne connects with Fagin. And
what's the point of having her? Not that it's a better storyline, but it makes more sense for Game of Thrones to have a bastard born Ilaria Sand throw a coup and take over Dorne in the name of Oberyn Martell. And that's why the people support her. That makes sense. It's not great. You know, I like the Dorne stuff in the Song of Ice and Fire better, but that's to play to Aegon, to Fagin.
Mm-hmm.
And then the same thing with Quentin Martell. If you're not going to include Arianne, it'll just confuse things more if you include Quentin. And yeah, Quentin doesn't have a whole lot to do with Fagin. It's more to connect them to Daenerys, but you don't need to do that because you can connect them anyway. It'll make sense why they're not included.
So let me ask you a question that's going on to the books, and I'll ask the answer here. And we know we have some sample chapters from the Winds of Winter.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely appears that Arianne Martell is going to make a play to be with Fagin.
Yeah, absolutely. I believe there's been two Arianne chapters.
Right.
And they're both heading towards Fagin. And he's taken Storm's End. Was it Storm's End? Yeah, he's taken Storm's End, which is nearly impregnable. Granted, there's no one there really defending it.
Mm-hmm.
But he's taken it. And Griffin's Roost, he takes that in the Dance with Dragons. And there's a few more castles that he takes in the Stormlands. To try and rally support. So he's going to go for King's Landing.
Which I will say again, I've been saying.
Yeah, I think I agree
with you. In the show, what we're seeing from Cersei right now is really going to be Fagin in the books. Fagin, at this point in the storyline, will be sitting the Iron Throne.
What does Fagin do with Cersei? Does he kill her?
That's the only thing I can't really. What does Cersei do? That's the only, like.
I mean, Tommen's got to go because Tommen's calling himself king.
Right.
I guess they all have to go. Tricky, right?
Unless, what happened? That's the only thing I can't. That it's argumentative. Well, what happens to Cersei then? Does she flee back to Khashoggi Rock? George has said we're going to see a lot more Khashoggi Rock in the Winds of Winter.
Right.
So that would be possible. She, you know, she realizes, oh crap, I better flee if I want to survive.
I can see how they get to point A from point B, but getting there is a little complicated.
Yeah.
This guy has written himself into so many corners. That
I definitely don't necessarily think he's written himself in the corners. I think the major problem is I think he's just written too much.
Right, for two books to
to finish all this cohesively into, you know, an ending, a story that can end.
Like, even if you get two Storm of Swords-sized books, I still feel like he's going to have to scrimp a little bit on what he gives us, and he's not going to do that. Maybe we do get an eighth book, or a ninth book. Well, I mean, I doubt we'd ever get it, but, you know, maybe theoretically that's what he needs to finish it. Thematically, it makes more sense for Daenerys to come back, for the Cloth Dragon.
Right.
She's going to have to go to some sort of war with him. If not like open warfare, at least she goes and she meets with him and she considers marrying him. She realizes he's not a real Targaryen. Then where does Jon Snow come in? Because is Jon Snow around at this point in time?
Right.
Is he king? You know what I mean? Like, it's not that I don't trust the Benioff and Weiss storyline. I think that they've
skipped so much.
Yeah, I think that
storyline. But I mean, at that point, Jon's resurrected. He's going to be coming down south. I don't know.
You would think so. Does she have Tyrion yet? There's so many things that we take for granted now because they happened so long ago in Game of Thrones.
Maybe this is where a character like Barristan Selmy could be important with Dany.
Mm-hmm.
I would think would have to come into play right here,
mm-hmm.
you know, with this Aegon character. Will he know for sure that was really Aegon that was killed and he can tell her and say, listen, that's, you know, look, they just gave this guy the Blackfyre sword. I know the Blackfyre sword was given to the Blackfyres.
Right.
How does he have it then? Boom. It's a Blackfyre, Danny. And then Fagin has the possibility of pissing Danny off anyways, because, you know, I'm not going to marry you. I'm going to marry Arianne Martell.
Yeah.
There's going to be a third book because there's just too much. We're not even going into the Battle for the Dawn right now. We're not even talking about the Greyjoys and all what they're going to be. Right. You know, there's so much. The Martells, the Greyjoys, what's happening. You know.
And don't get me wrong. I love it all. It's all great.
There's so much
of it. And I wouldn't care if there's an 8th or 9th or 10th book as long as he writes them. But he doesn't. So you think of another book, you're like, oh, Jesus. Like, he's never going to finish this thing. But most likely, he's never going to finish this thing anyway, the way things are going. So I think it's pretty much a foregone conclusion that he's never going to finish this thing. Is he 70 yet? He's pushing 70. He's
67 or 68. His birthday was just recently. I think he's 68 now.
I'm sure he took the day off from writing to celebrate his birthday. Anyway, what else? You got anything else with Game of Thrones? I think they didn't quite start production yet, but they're starting soon.
I know Arya's down there already, east, wherever, over there.
Is she tweeting how floored we'll be?
Oh, yeah.
Or is it going to explode?
This is the shocker. No crab, Macy William. It's only the last.
Yeah, we get it. We'll definitely be watching. Don't worry. You don't have to convince us. We're sold.
I just read something on the, I can't stand these things. They're such like clickbait articles.
Oh, yeah.
But, it was basically saying like, Arya is going to have her biggest year ever or something like that. Okay.
What biggest year ever? Was she a football player?
Yeah, like this is her biggest season. This is going to be her biggest season ever. Well, it's your last one. Year. It's the last one, and you know, and I'm sure we're within the first episode we're going to get the, in my opinion, the meetup we've all been waiting for.
Jon and Arya.
Jon and Arya is going to, you know, have.
Well, they're on the
Jon's going to Winterfell, and she's going to be there. That's going to be a moment.
Yeah, I was looking forward to a lot of meetups this season, and I feel like. For the most part.
The big one was going to be Bran, and Dr. Bran Hanna was just so weird. So
weird about it, yeah.
Just ruined everything. Yeah. Thank you, Sansa.
Well,
I saw you getting raped. You were beautiful. You took it well.
Dr. Bran Hanna. Who, by the way, as the Three-Eyed Raven, has been absolutely no use to
anyone.
Anybody. As anything. Except bringing up bad memories.
I just love the memes. That's the best set of memes now. Come from Dr. Bran Hanna.
Bran memes. Yeah.
John, I saw you and Danny. You looked beautiful that night.
Bran's watching. Careful. He just seems like a creep out. Right?
Yeah.
Like, he's like using his powers to help everything. He's just like, yeah, so
I see everything.
I saw you anywhere tonight.
I watched the day my father and my mother conceived me.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Gross.
Like, oh, your brother's so fucking weird.
They're getting the biggest budget this season,
right? Yeah.
So maybe we'll see a direwolf this season. I don't know. Maybe we'll see ghosts.
They got enough for a direwolf. Yeah.
5 minutes worth of ghosts made to kill them off. That's where it's going. I mean, it's inevitable that ghosts is a dead man walking at this point. They've totally betrayed that relationship with John and Ghost by not even showing him with him. At least
I didn't mention. I didn't even mention it.
They mentioned it once
in season 7.
Yes,
I don't remember.
Wasn't even my John. It was by Sansa. Sansa is talking with Arya, and she's like, you know, where is Jon? You know, these Northern Lords, they're not going to wait for him. You know, they're not going to sit around waiting for him like Ghost will. But it was just like
a throwaway.
Exactly. Yeah. I wouldn't even know if someone had tipped me off to that path that he was even mentioned.
So that would have been, what, episode?
4 or 5 or something like that.
I wonder if that was the Cogman episode. I feel like Brian Cogman tries to keep the connections to the book more straight up than Benioff and Weiss do. It's going to have no emotion at all next season if he does die or when John's reunited with Ghost, because it doesn't seem like Ghost is important to John at all. They have betrayed that relationship. I would rather they have not used the direwolves. They probably could have done the entire series without direwolves. I guess not at the beginning. I don't know. They really fucked that up and they didn't have to. Anyway, let's take a break there. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about Southern Ambitions, Rickard Stark. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Princes That Were Promised, the podcast that tears apart Westeros and sifts through the pieces.
Back, the princes that were promised, the wardens of Long Island, thinking about what kind of topic to follow up our season 7 Game of Thrones coverage, rather than do another R plus L equals J episode, which is kind of redundant at this point, because I don't think an argument needs to be made any longer to prove that theory. Whereas the end of season six, it kind of, it didn't leave it open-ended. It was, as far as John and I were concerned, it was an open and shut case that he was the son of Rhaegar and Lyanna. And it wasn't a question of, well, maybe the TV show is going in this direction and the books will go in a different direction. Some people could conceivably make that argument. So when we followed up season six, that was what we followed it up with, was R plus L equals J. Following up season seven, I don't think that there's any question for books or show that not only is R plus L equals J true, but we know Jon is Aegon Targaryen and the rightful heir to the Iron Throne.
Which I'm sure that will still be, that's still going to be.
Well, they'll always be the detractors who want some attention or have been banking on a swerve within a swerve for years. Maybe it's embarrassment. I don't know, but I don't feel that it really needs to be addressed because they're wrong.
I haven't seen anything from that one. I've always seen that. I don't want to mention any names.
Oh, really?
I haven't seen her lately on any comments. I've been trying to look for it. I've been trying to like find something to piss me off.
It's very hard to come up with an argument against that now. So with that in mind, the best follow-up is possibly the lead-up to the events of A Game of Thrones, the events of A Song of Ice and Fire, the setup for how the realm is at the beginning of the series. We call him Jon Snow, we call him Aegon Targaryen now. What do we call him?
Well, I'm trying to get into the system of calling him Aegon Targaryen. I still mess up myself.
Yeah. I think with all the Aegons there are out there, maybe it's easier to call him Jon Snow for now. Where Jon Snow is at the beginning of the events of A Song of Ice and Fire, and how he got there, how Robert got on the Iron Throne. And along those lines, how the realm got so fractured to the point where Balon Greyjoy thought it would be a good idea to call himself king. And further down the road in Clash of Kings, the Civil War of the War of the Five Kings, how a lot of those sides were already drawn before the war breaks out.
It's like an average like once every 10 years is a war.
It does seem that way, right?
It seems like there's a war. Then like it just, all right, you have like peace for like 5 to 7 years.
Yeah.
And then something always seems to bubble up. Yeah. And then within that, before that 10-year period, there is another war.
Well, that kind of goes back to what we were talking about with, I think it was one of the Seven Pointed Stars, with the inability of Westeros to come up with any sort of technology to get into any sort of modern day. And I don't mean cars and computers, but some sort of industrial revolution or some sort of renaissance where scientific and mechanical discoveries are made. And they never get there because there's never peacetime. There's always war. And it's odd because if you think about like wars here on Earth, right? Wars that America is involved in, it seems like there's always like a big push in technology. Like there's always more advanced war machines, more advanced bombs, tanks, what have you, every time we go to war. But here, the constant warring, it just seems to hold the society and culture back in a medieval age. And for thousands and thousands of years, it's been like this. So it's odd that with all the warring that there's never an advance in anything. It's still the same old weapons that they're using.
Right. Nothing ever advances itself.
The lead up to the War of the Usurper and Robert's Rebellion, I think it all points back to what's called the Southern Ambitions. And when we talk about the Southern Ambitions, we can associate it most with Rickard Stark, Ned's father, who was the Lord of Winterfell. He died at the Red Keep at the hands of Aerys Targaryen, and that led to the breakout of Robert's Rebellion. But before all that, he took part in the War of the Nine Penny Kings. The War of the Nine Penny Kings was the Fifth Blackfyre Rebellion, the War of the Nine Penny Kings. A conflict involving several of the free cities of Essos and the Seven Kingdoms of Westeros. The Nine Penny Kings were a group, they were known as the Band of Nine, and it was a group of merchants and pirates, other mercenaries from the free cities of Braavos, and they banded together to carve out kingdoms for themselves in the Stepstones across Essos, and they set their sights on Westeros. And the most prominent of these Nine Penny Kings was Maelys Blackfyre. Maelys was also known as Maelys the Monstrous because he had a second head growing out of his neck. So it was said that he consumed his twin while in the womb. Maelys had commanded the Golden Company, and he was determined to reclaim his rightful throne as the last of the Blackfyre line. So essentially what the Band of Nine did was merchants and pirates, mercenaries, and they decided that they'd form almost like a conglomerate and help each other conquer lands that each one wanted to conquer. Mm-hmm. And Maelys wanted to conquer Westeros and win his Iron Throne. He was the last of the Blackfyres. The last of the Blackfyre line, or so we think. So word reached King's Landing that they set their sights on Westeros. Jaehaerys II Targaryen was sitting the Iron Throne. And he followed Aegon the Unlikely, Aegon V, who died in the tragedy of Summerhall. And I don't really want to go too much into the details of the War of the Nine Penny Kings as far as like where battles were fought and anything. At the end of the day, Ser Barristan Selmy ended the War of the Nine Penny Kings, slaying Maelys the Monster.
The last male descendant
of the Blackfyre. The important thing about this was a realm-wide conflict. The realm was united. And a lot of the patriarchs of the generation of noble lords we have at the beginning of A Song of Ice and Fire were fighting alongside each other in the Nine Penny Kings. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about Ned's father, Rickard Stark. We're talking about Robert and Stannis' father, Stefan Baratheon. Tywin Lannister was involved. Catelyn's father, Hoster Tully.
John Arryn. Was Mace Tyrell's father involved? No.
I think where these battles were fought, I don't think it was too close to that far south in Westeros. I mean, they had to be involved. They had to have answered the call of the banners. I just don't think he was involved in this group of
war. No, he wasn't. He wasn't part of the crew.
The clique.
There you go.
They established relationships, and it seems like it takes a few years for all this to
matriculate.
Right. War of the Nine Penny Kings started in 260 AC.
260. Wow.
Yeah. Like Aerys wasn't even king yet. Aerys fought in the war also. And we did that one episode with Tywin, Stephen, and Aerys, how they were good friends through the War of the Nine Penny Kings.
Long story short, I guess, would just be that whatever it was, they just formed a bond that they must kept in contact with. And then once they had their sons and their daughters, it's like, let me just call my old friend up there, Hoster Tully. He has a couple of women for my boys.
Yeah.
Get the Riverlands. John Arryn said he'd gladly take one of my boys as a ward. Be friendly with them.
When this war was fought, Tywin wasn't the Lord of Casterly Rock yet. Aerys wasn't king. Even Stefan Baratheon, he wasn't the Lord of Storm's End yet.
Does George even have a name for Stefan's father?
Lord Ormond. Ormond Baratheon, yeah.
That's right, Ormond, yep. It was just a name, I think.
Ormond.
I'd get back to it.
I was eating some almonds. I just thought of Ormond. Notable commanders on Westeros' side. Ormond Baratheon, Gerald Hightower, Qualyn Greyjoy, Jason Lannister, who I think was Tywin's uncle, I believe. Lord Roger Rayne in the Reigns of Castamere. I think Jason Lannister is Tywin's uncle, but younger. Mm-hmm. So closer to Tywin in age. The important thing to take out of the War of the Nine Penny Kings is that these younger men that were going to go on to become the lords of their houses establish relationships. And it seems that as they become lords, they have a different outlook on the realm than their fathers did. So, talked about this many times, if you're the lord of a great noble house, you're going to form a marriage alliance with one of your vassal houses, mm-hmm. because that's the important thing. You want to keep that alliance strong. You want to keep that relationship strong. You're not looking outside your own lands, outside your own realm of rule for alliances, except in cases of war or really extreme cases, it doesn't happen that often.
Do you think with Rickard, when he made all these proposals, do you think that pissed off some of his northern lords? House Umber, say for instance, like, I got this daughter. I mean, wait a minute.
That's three star kids and they're all like going to other lands. Yeah, I do. I think it pissed off some. I think for the most part, though, it didn't piss them off enough to the point of rebellion. I mean, they couldn't. It's not like the old days where
it was just like washerwoman talk. Yeah, you know.
Right.
Can you believe this and that? Can you believe Rickard Stark just, right. you know, like, doesn't even take an eye to my daughter to marry one of his sons? I mean, you know, it's just his protocol.
Well, Barbary Dustin being case in point, though, she's bitter against Rickard Stark for his southern ambitions, and mostly because she loved Brandon, and Brandon was then put in a marriage alliance with the Tullys to marry Catelyn. And these are the results of this relationship all these years later. What was the reason behind it, though? These southern ambitions.
Before you get on, I want to ask, what did Aerys do in the early parts of his kingship that they realized that he was not suited to be king? You talked off air about Aerys coming into court and putting all the doubts, putting all these seeds of mistrust. But did they see maybe something, on the battlefield with him or something? Like, Aerys acting all like kooky or something, in their own right, in their own eyes.
Well, that's the thing. Aerys' reign started off very promising, is what everyone says. And during the War of the Nine Penny Kings, he was knighted. The future looked good for Aerys Targaryen. People were excited for him to become king. to him being the last Targaryen king, pretty much directly because of his reign, Targaryen dynasty ends. How does point A get to point B?
Well, it's complicated. Any reason or any occurrence that may shed some light on how a prince with such promise, not a prince that was promised, but a prince with such promise turned into the Mad King is worth investigating and worth including in how this transformation went about. We could record 2 or 3 full-length episodes on Aerys Targaryen, second of his name. So I'm going to try and be quick and concise with these facts about Aerys Targaryen. Aerys married his sister Rhaella at his father's command. Neither sibling wished to marry the other, but they were both dutiful to their royal father, unlike their royal father and his royal father's wishes and commands, being that they did what their king commanded, but their king did not do what his king commanded when he was in their place. Aerys married his sister, but he did not keep faith with her. Some rumors around King's Landing and the Red Keep placed a number nearly as high as Aegon the Unworthy's number of mistresses. Aerys Targaryen was charming, generous, handsome, and he was determined to be a great king. These qualities of the 18-year-old Aerys somehow transformed to the suspicious, jealous, and cruel fury of a 34-year-old Aerys. So, point A to point B, the handsome, charming young man had become a middle-aged man with 9-inch nails, all cracked and yellow, a matted beard, with unwashed, tangled Targaryen hair drooping down below his waist, and a nation of scabs on his arms and legs from the blades of the Iron Throne. Towards the end of his reign, it seemed that Aerys' paranoia was the true king of Westeros. He would connect a very minor defiance or any act that he couldn't immediately understand. He would connect them as a grand conspiracy against him. Those people that he decided were enemies to him were victims of sadistic punishments, mostly involving fire. More often than not, they were burned to death. Aerys was consumed with a fascination of fire, and eventually, watching an enemy or, like whoever, burn to death was the only way that Aerys Targaryen became sexually aroused. And this arousal was beyond sexual abuse from his sister Rhaella's point of view. So how did Aerys Targaryen become the Mad King? How did he become King Scab? Despite being raised in a metaphorical ocean of misunderstood prophecy and near fanaticism, Aerys turned his back on prophecy and symbolism. We know Aerys had formed a close relationship with both his cousin, Stefan Baratheon, who was the heir to Storm's End, and Tywin Lannister, who was the heir to Casterly Rock at the time, and a royal page at King's Landing. The three of them were inseparable. John and I discussed this. We discussed this in an episode probably dating back 8 months in the archives, but it was an episode that focused on Aerys, Tywin, Stefan, and their relationships, specifically when they were young men before they became lords and kings in their own right. The three were inseparable, and they sailed to the Stepstones together to fight against the Band of Nine during the War of the Nine Penny Kings. Aerys was a squire at the time, but he earned his knighthood during the conflict, and he chose for Tywin Lannister to knight him. The road to insanity for Aerys involved the following: a high number of miscarriages and stillbirths, including 3 sons. At first, he was supportive of Rhaella with these miscarriages and stillbirths, but eventually he came to the belief that Rhaella had taken another lover, and these children were the product of Rhaella laying with her concubine. Is that the right word? It doesn't matter. Aerys concluded that the gods did not want a bastard to sit the Iron Throne, and that's why these children were stillborn or miscarried, because they were not his, and therefore they were bastards born out of wedlock. Crazy. The miscarriages, the stillbirths. Another reason likely was the loveless marriage he had to his sister.
More so than these reasons, his soured relationship with Tywin Lannister, who had been his best friend in his youth, it became the opposite while Tywin served as his hand. Also, Aerys did not live up to the expectations he had for himself as king, and perhaps he found he did not have the skill set to be the king that he assumed that he would be. And as all of these factors became more and more bloated in his mind, in mental weight, there was the betrayal and aggressive actions of House Darkling directly against Aerys in what was to be called the Defiance of Duskendale. Duskendale was a port town situated off the coast of Blackwater Bay in the Crownlands, so it's just north and east of King's Landing. And King Aerys traveled to Duskendale at the invitation of Lord Dennys Darkling and completely against the advice of Lord Tywin. Lord Dennys petitioned for a new town charter, as well as certain rights for citizens of Duskendale that they did not have. The town charter would lower their taxes to the crown, but the petition was rejected by Tywin Lannister. And when this happened, Lord Dennys instead demanded a new charter and attempted a very aggressive and ballsy, to say the least, negotiation tactic. He ceased paying the crown its taxes. Lord Dennys had heard stories of the king's difficult relationship with his hand, Lord Tywin, and Lord Dennys made a play that, in hindsight, likely was the worst idea in the history of House Darkling. King Aerys decided to take up the invitation from Lord Dennys to prove, possibly to Tywin, but more likely to himself, that he could solve this issue. But he did not have the opportunity to solve this issue as he was walking into a trap when he arrived at Duskendale. Sir Gawain Gaunt of the Kingsguard and much of the king's escort to Duskendale were killed protecting Aerys. And Aerys was taken prisoner and treated quite poorly, being stripped of his clothing, having his beard yanked by his squires. Lord Dennys was all in at this point. He was all in as Lord Tywin surrounded the town of Duskendale with a host ready to put the entire town to the sword. The Lord Darkling threatened that he would kill Aerys at the first sign of assault. 'Twas Sir Barristan the Bold that snuck into Duskendale ninja style. He Batmaned his way to the dungeon, and he Han Soloed his king out of Duskendale. Obviously, Lord Dennys Darkling didn't have to worry about taxes any longer. However, Aerys went further and snuffed out House Darkling entirely, and House Hollard, except for the boy Dantus Hollard, for their involvement in aiding Lord Dennys. It is agreed in-universe by the Maesters that Aerys' experience at Duskendale fully completed the transformation of Aerys from promising king to dangerous, crazy, mad king. Aerys would not leave the Red Keep at all, starting with the moment he returned from Duskendale in 277 AC until he surprised the realm by appearing at Lord Wendt's tourney at Harrenhal in 281. During his time at the Red Keep, he became convinced that Tywin Lannister, his wife and sister, Rhaella, and his son, the Crown Prince Rhaegar Targaryen, had all conspired to scale the walls at Duskendale so that Aerys would be killed, and this would clear the way for Rhaegar to ascend to the Iron Throne, to become King of the Seven Kingdoms, and marry Cersei Lannister.
Aegon the Unlikely, Aegon the Fifth, Aegon from Dunkin' Egg, he wanted to end the incest of House Targaryen. I guess his son Jaehaerys II was cool with it because Aerys marries his sister Rhaella. Because
Jaehaerys is the first one that saw the prophecy that the bloodline through Aerys and Rhaella would lead to the prince that was promised. So it was kind of like, oh, they have to marry each other because they have to fulfill this prophecy.
Right.
It was Jaehaerys that was the first one that thought, yeah, that's of the Targaryens that really saw this prophecy. Rhaegar was knee-deep in it.
And Jaehaerys pushes for this marriage between Aerys and his sister Rhaella. And Sir Barristan says that there was no fondness between the two siblings. They were just doing their duty. I guess Aerys the Mad kind of started with his infatuation with Joanna Lannister, right? Because he was really good friends with Tywin. But it's also said that he was in love with Tywin's wife, who was also Tywin's cousin. Upon his coronation, he declared it his wish to be the greatest king in the history of the Seven Kingdoms. Here's an interesting note. When Lord Rickard Stark of Winterfell visited King's Landing in 264 AC, Aerys and him hatched a plan to build a new wall, hundreds of miles north of the current one, claim all the lands in between.
Rickard Stark, northern ambitions.
Northern ambitions, too. Reading that, it does seem as though the core group, Rickard Stark, Jon Arryn, Stefan Baratheon, Hoster Tully, it does also kind of include Tywin and Aerys. They're all young men, and right. They're all fighting together, and they all have these grand plans for the realm as they're going to be coming into their own. So push the wall north. Rickard is thinking about forming alliances with the houses in the south. So it may not be that these southern ambitions were born out of a desire to see Aerys fall or a desire to gain more power. Maybe it was born out of a desire to make the realm a better place. Maybe not. In 272, to celebrate Aerys' 10th year on the Iron Throne, Tywin hosted the anniversary tourney in King's Landing. Joanna Lannister returned to the court for this event, bringing her 6-year-old twins, Cersei and Jaime. Drunkenly, Aerys asked Joanna if nursing her children had ruined her breasts. Oh, man.
So, hold on. Was Tyrion born yet?
No.
Can this been the time?
273.
Can this been the time?
The next year, yeah. Yeah, it's possible. It's possible.
Because
that's 272.
I'm going to debunk this right now, because if we read the Royal Fire book, it tells us that at the possible time of conception, Joanna and Aerys are not even near each other. Joanna's in Lannisport. She's not even at King's Landing. And we know that Aerys hardly left King's Landing. Especially they were not around the same time frame of conception. It's just like the same people that think that Jon is the son of Robert and Lyanna when Robert wasn't even around Lyanna in 282 for that baby being born at that time. It doesn't fit the timeline.
I'm sorry, you're saying the twins don't fit the timeline?
Yeah.
Tyrion does.
Tyrion does.
Tyrion totally does. Yeah, because that's 272 that she comes
if
back
to. Tyrion. I just got to go back to the whole fact that Dany, Jon, Tyrion's mother all died from childbirth. All connections that they're dragons. It's not the twins. I can't wait for this to be disproved and all this. Jaime's Azor Ahai because he's Aerys' son gets disproved. All these people.
Dude, I can't believe that Tywin was still hand after some of the shit that Aerys did to him or said about him.
Took a lot of shit, Tywin.
Yeah.
But maybe that made Tywin into what he was also. Maybe that, you know, listen, I took some shit on the Aerys. I'm not taking any shit from anyone else in this realm.
Right. He was just biding his time.
Yeah. When they think the name Tywin lasts, they're going to bite their lip in fear.
Yeah. They say the king's madness abated slightly with the birth of another son who he named Jaehaerys. In fact, Jaehaerys' birth almost restored the king to his old self, but it changed when Jaehaerys died later that same year. In a black rage, Aerys had boy's wet nurse beheaded, convinced that it had been her fault. He had a change of heart and declared that his mistress was to blame and that she had poisoned the young babe. So he had her and her entire family tortured and eventually executed. Under torture, they all confessed to murdering Prince Jaehaerys. This dude's a fucking nut job.
We see all these miscarriages with Aerys and Rhaella and all this. It would make perfect sense that Aerys would have a child with Joanna, and that child would be a dwarf, that he would be deformed up a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm telling you right now, I am convinced that Tyrion is Aerys' son. It's not the twins. It does not fit the timeline.
No, it doesn't. As far as Tywin hating Tyrion, you can go both ways. If it's his only real child, you can see why he hates him. If it's not his child, if it's Aerys' child, you can definitely see why he hates him.
But then some people will bring up, well, why wouldn't he just kill him? Thing is, Tywin can't make that publicized that he was taken advantage of. Right.
Can't have that.
Even if it's not his son.
That can never get out. We know that Varys, as the Master of Whispers, fed fuel to Aerys' paranoia. This made his behavior more cruel and less trusting. And by the time Varys came into his service, he had no trust for his son Rhaegar, no trust for his wife, no trust for Tywin. DTA, he didn't trust anybody by this point in time. The alliance that people call the Southern Ambitions.
I've got an alliance.
Right. It's not like they came together to get rid of Aerys. It just seems that they formed a friendship and a bond. We say the word Southern Ambitions, but we get that from Barbary Dustin in The Dance with Dragons. And Barbary Dustin talks about Rickard Stark and his Southern Ambitions in terms to Brandon Stark, mm-hmm. who she was in love with.
And it comes off very negatively, just the way she says it. When I read those chats, I feel like she's very bitter about it.
All of the Starks.
Yeah.
You know, because she couldn't marry Brandon. Brandon went to marry Catelyn Tully, so she married Dustin, whichever the fuck Dustin she married. I don't think it matters which Dustin it was. She was of House Risewell. Now she's the lady of House Dustin just because all of the males in House Dustin have mm-hmm. died in Rob's war, in Robert's Rebellion before that. They've died going to war for the Starks. So not only does she not get to marry Brandon because of Rickard's, what she calls Rickard's southern ambitions, but none of the men in her life are around because they all died fighting in Stark Wars.
And another thing that really tips why she hates Eddard so much is that Ned doesn't bring the bones back of...
Right.
But he brings the horse back.
Right. I remember that. Yes.
Which does sound...
yeah.
All right. Brought the horse. Yeah. Forgot the bones.
I figured you need the horse. What are you going to do?
I understand why he couldn't bring all the bones. I mean, his first and foremost thing he wanted to bring out his bones. That's his priority. It's only him and Hal and Reed really left alive at that point.
How many bones can they carry up north?
How many horses and bones can he carry? But they bring the horse.
Yeah.
Obviously, she doesn't want to hear that. She feels slighted. And that's why she has...
all this bitterness towards them.
Yeah, and does she have the Eddard's bones, or does she tries to go after?
Well, what she says in Dance of Dragons is when those bones show up at Mo Cailin, when they show up at the Neck, I'm going to take them and make sure that they never reach Winterfell. But you said before, are most Northerners angry that Rickard Stark in particular was fostering his son out of the North and marrying his other son out of the North and marrying his daughter out of the North?
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much Benjen would have been the only child he had left in the North. Do I think most Northerners were angry at that? I don't think most were, but I do think that you had more than one Barbary Dustin. She's a special case because...
of Brandon.
Because of Brandon, but I'm sure there were other detractors who were saying that Rickard's not worried about the North. And we see that later on with Rob, those same detractors saying that Rob was just trying to carve out a bigger kingdom for himself, including the Riverlands, and he wasn't worried about the North anymore. It's kind of odd that so many Northerners feel that way. It's almost like an insecurity, like the Starks don't want to be in the North. They want to rule in the South. They're not going to rebel. They're not going to challenge the Starks for rule in the North. But that anger and those feelings of being slighted, they continue on. And maybe they play out with the Boltons at the Red Wedding, and they play out with those houses that side with the Boltons later on in the Dance with Dragons. I mean, you get the vibe that most houses are loyal to the Starks. They will do anything for the Starks, and they respect the Starks. If you look at what Rickard Stark did, and then you look at what Rob did, it's really Ned in the middle that is the real Northern leader out of the three of them.
Right.
Even though he went and fought in Robert's Rebellion, that wasn't to like push the boundaries of the North or to get more power for himself.
His head was being, you know...
He hasn't
reason to.
Yeah.
He had to fight for his life. And then, of course, he goes down south when Robert asks him, you know, because he can't say no. And also, of course, Catelyn Tully just, you know, bring all the evidence. Because I would love if, like, George came out and said, well, it was based off all a lie or something. Like, wouldn't it be so fitting that Catelyn made it seem like all of a sudden he had to go down south or something?
This idea of southern ambitions, this idea that the High Lords of the Realm wanted to form a leadership council and remove Aerys from the Iron Throne. It's not proven, but the main points that support it are what Barbary Dustin says about Rickard and how he and his maester, Wallys, form these relationships with other great houses. And this is fostering Ned at the Eyrie, marrying Brandon to Catelyn.
You're mentioning his maester, because the master conspiracy, the anti-Targaryen, he was getting influenced to do this. Like, oh, you should, you know, do all this so we can gain power against the Targaryens.
Right.
But at the time comes.
Well, they do kind of fit together, the southern ambitions and the maester conspiracy, because the maester conspiracy is to remove the Targaryens. The incestuous relationships, the connection to old Valyria. If you remove them, you do have a more even kingdom. The way they look at it is, maybe they know something that we don't know, but the dragons and the return of the dragons really prevents the modernization of society. We talked about that in the podcast, and this podcast isn't about that, but that idea that the maesters want the Targaryens removed so that society can move forward is definitely something to consider and something that fits with everything else. And it fits with the southern ambitions and a council against Aerys Targaryen, a council against the Targaryens. Maybe a monarchy is not something that the maesters want. Maybe they want more of a democracy. Democracies do exist in this world, and Essos, for instance, in Pentos, where Illyrio Mopatis is, they vote for the prince, and he serves for a few years, and if he does a bad job, they kill him. But he gets voted in. It's an election.
They kill him.
The tigers and the elephants. Atlantis, or is that a...
Yeah, it's...
I think it's Atlantis. The tigers. Tigers,
elephant, and there's one more. They're never in unison. It's always like two against, you know, there's always...
Yeah, it's an odd number. So, and I think the tigers always want war, the elephants don't, but they get voted in also. And I don't know if it's an election of the people, but it's an election of at least the, like the nobility or the merchants, the landowners, whatever it is. So there are forms of, democracy is the wrong word for it, but there are forms of elected leaders in this world. So it's not unheard of. Maybe that's the future that the Maesters envision. It starts in Westeros with the High Lords forming an alliance and ridding the realm of the current monarch. The next event that kind of supports the idea of Southern ambitions is the tourney at Harrenhal. We've done an episode on this before. House Went was the ruling house of Harrenhal, and Lord Went through this grand tournament. It was like a who's who of the realm at that moment, and nobody thought that Aerys Targaryen was going to
show up.
Right, but Rhaegar was. So the theory is that this tournament was a cover for all these High Lords to meet with Rhaegar, because the lavish spending and the spectacle of this tournament was outside of Lord Went's
pocketbook.
Yeah, you know, yeah, pretty much. His incomes weren't able to afford the amount of money it seemed that he spent on this tournament. So the idea being that somebody else fronted him money for this tournament.
Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. The Southern Ambitions, The War of the Usurper. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/thepromisedprinces. Send us a raven on Twitter @princesspromised. Visit our website, thepromisedprinces.actionpactpodcasts.com. Read our writings, our in-depth reviews at the Westerosi Companion Papers, theprincesthatwerepromised.wordpress.com. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Store, Stitcher, Cast Crunch. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can find The Princes That Were Promised. Subscribe, leave a review, tell a friend, tell a family member, tell coworkers.